ಸುಭುವಸ್ವ ತತ್ಸವಿತೂರ್ವರೆಣ್ಯಂ ಭರ್ಗೋ ದೇವಸ್ಯ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧಿಯೋ ಯೋ ನ ಪ್ರಚೋದಯಾತ್. ಓಂ. Our salutations to that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying Viveka Chudamuni, or Crest Jewel of Discrimination, by the great seer philosopher Shankara. In this treatise, just what we are going to study just now, there is brought the idea of, or the truth, what the Atman or the Self, true I, am. And to realize the Atman, to realize the true Self, is the same as realizing God. Because that Self is God. Atman is Brahman. That thou art. Now this is not taken for granted. This is not a speculation. But this is something that is realized and realizable. Sri Ramakrishna, you will find in the Gospel how he repeatedly points out, to realize the Atman is possible for every human being. In other words, from our relative standpoint, we can say, it is possible for everyone, every human being, to realize God. Because God is within us, He is our very Self. Now, of course, what that Self is, in order to realize, there are three steps. First is, you hear about the truth of this. And what is that truth that you hear? That I am Brahman. Or that thou art. Then a reason upon it. That is, try to understand intellectually what is meant by that. Can that Atman be the body or the mind? Or this analysis of the Self. To reason out, what is the abiding, the eternal truth in us? And lastly, to meditate and meditate and meditate until that truth of Atman becomes revealed to you. In other words, it is, as I said, not a speculation, not a theory, but a fact of experience. You see, when they try to find out what are the proofs for the existence of God, how can you have the proofs for the existence of God? Before you can have any proofs, before you can consider or think of anything, you have to exist. And you are God. But this is a matter of experience. And only when you experience that truth, only when you realize God within your own soul, then is it that you have known anything about religion. Now, let us again see it from another angle. Just consider that all the desires, ambitions, all these that arise in us, I want to achieve this, I want happiness, I want wealth, I want to achieve something in life. You see, this seeking and trying to have something for yourself, you see, that is, in other words, our whole world is centered around my own self. Everyone's world is centered around the self, around that I. I am desiring, I am wanting. But the question does not arise, who this I am? And that is the search for truth, search for religion. To seek, to find out, to realize who I am, that is seeking. And until we find that true self, we are simply wasting our life. They call about enjoying life. Who is enjoying? Who is suffering? Who is gaining knowledge? Who is acquiring wealth? Who is this? And that is the search of religion. Who am I? Then you find a soul who has known that truth. And he says, that thou art. Now find out who that thou art. And so we find the reasoning here, the analysis here. First, we have already studied how this body cannot be the Atman. Because, you see, you have to take up this first proposition. First, you may call that hypothesis. For us, it may be hypothesis. But not for the one who has realized and attained it. And who has attained it, not one person, but many, millions in the past. And all those are recorded in the scripture. And so they point out that this Atman, this I, the true I, that is pure, free, divine, that is Sat, Chit, Ananda, immortal, pure consciousness, pure bliss, and pure abiding love. That is the nature of the Atman. That is the nature of ourself. Now, which is that? Is that the body? No. The body is subject to birth and subject to death. You see, here is the point, you know, again, how one can misapply. I am divine, I am free, I am pure. And so how can there be any disease, or sickness, or death? No, this I, the Atman has neither disease, nor sickness, nor death. But what is it that is born, and what is it that dies, and what it is that has health or disease? The body. So the body cannot be the Atman, it cannot be the self. You see, howsoever you may try, and whatever your dogmas can make you believe. Nobody can immortalize this physical body. Now this reminds me, I met one lady, she was about, at that time, 90 years old, and she studied Vedanta, and then, naturally, I went to see her. And she says, I found something greater than Vedanta. And I asked her, what is it? You know, in Los Angeles. What is it? Oh, I'm going to a teacher who is teaching me how to immortalize this body. I said, oh, good. And of course, you know, a 90-year-old woman, naturally, she was all wrinkled up. And I thought to myself, oh God, to try to immortalize this face. And of course, after 10 days, she was dead. This is an actual fact. I knew this. And so you have to consider, and as we already read that portion, how this physical sheath, you see, it says the Atman is encased in so many sheaths. First is called this physical sheath, this body. And how this is not the Atman is considered first. Those who live in ignorance identify the body with the Atman. This ignorance is the root cause of birth, death and rebirth. Therefore, you must strive earnestly to destroy it. When your heart is free from this ignorance, there will no longer be any possibility of your rebirth. You will reach immortality. It's a continuity of existence, that is not immortality. The continuity of existence is with everybody, with everything. You see, in a sense, there is the continuity of existence of this physical body also. In what sense? Well, it turns into ashes or it rots and, you know, and then again something or something, you see. Not complete destruction, not complete absolute destruction is possible for anything. Though you may lose the body, yes. In that sense, what we call matter also is continually existing, is indestructible from that standpoint. In some other form it exists. It goes to the cause, original form, earth, air, water, so on and so forth. Immortality is only in the Atman. Atman is immortal. It is unborn and undying. Unchangeable. It's not changing at all. And to reach immortality means to realize I am the Atman. Then you have neither birth nor death. And that is attaining immortality. Until then, one reincarnates. The next covering he calls the vital covering. That covering of the Atman, which is called the vital covering, is made up of the vital force and the 5 organs of action. The body is called the physical covering. It comes to life when it is enveloped by the vital covering. It is thus that the body engages in action. The vital covering, that is, that vital covering expresses to us like breath, as breath. You see, we breathe, we live and breathe. That is the vital covering. This vital covering is not the Atman, for it is merely composed of the vital airs. Air-like, it enters and leaves the body with death. You see, you breathe your last. It does not know what is good or bad for itself or for others. It's always dependent upon the Atman. Then there is the another covering called the mental covering. The mind, together with the organs of perception, forms the mental covering. It causes, in what we call mind, it causes the sense of I and mine. It also causes us to discern objects. It's endowed with the power and faculty of differentiating objects by giving them various names. It's manifest, enveloping the vital covering. The mental covering may be compared to the sacrificial fire. It is fed by the fuel of many desires. Now, all those desires are in the mind. The five organs of perception serve as priests. Objects of desire are poured upon it like continuous stream of oblations. Thus it is that this phenomenal universe is brought forth. Now this is very interesting, you will find. According to Shankara, next also as you find, whatever we are sensing or perceiving through the organs of perception and mind, they're all projection of our own mind. See, it's not exactly, you know, like Berkeleyan philosophy. Not exactly that. You see, Berkeleyan philosophy or subjective idealism is this way, that the esse of a thing, I don't know if I'm pronouncing correctly, E-S-S-E, is its percipi. That is, the essence or existence of a thing is its perception. This thing exists because I perceive it. If there is no subject, no I, to perceive this, there will be no this. You see, in other words, only the perceiver is real. The object of perception is not real. You know, and there is this funny story about this Berkeleyan philosophy, that a man was getting drowned, and he says, the universe is getting drowned. Because after all, the universe exists only in his mind. But this is something different. You see, this is here. The mind is projecting this, but not this individual mind. This is a cosmic mind. We are parts of that mind. And it is the cosmic mind's projection is what is known as the creation. And we being parts of the mind, we are perceiving these phenomena, this universe. What you may call, God created this universe. God is the creator. That's the cosmic mind is projecting this universe before us. We are all parts of that mind. Now, if we transcend the mind, or if we purify the mind, this universe disappears. We are no longer subject to this illusion. I hope you'll have many questions to ask on this point. And then, of course, I can explain more. So I'm stimulating you. So it is not that subjective idealism. From another angle, both mind, subject and object have the same reality and unreality. In other words, this mind also disappears. Here again, try to understand this philosophy. We have the mind just as we have the body. And the body dissolves with death. But the mind continues to live attached to the Atman until we attain liberation. The moment we realize I am the Atman, the mind falls away, dissolves away. You see, that's what in Buddhism there is called no mind. The Atman, they call it, no mind. And so the mind is as far real as this object. And this object is as real as the mind. Both have the same degree of reality and both disappear in the highest supreme knowledge. Now, of course, here we are concerned with mind, and the ignorance is in the mind. The desires and cravings are in the mind, not in the Atman. The Atman has no craving or desire. The Atman is always, there is the fullness. Atman is always pure, free, divine, ananda, blissful, always. But it is the mind that is the cause of ignorance. Ignorance is nowhere except in the mind. The mind is filled with ignorance, and this causes the bondage of birth and death. Now, what does that ignorance mean? The mind's cravings, desires. You see, what can I say? You see, they all say that this kind of philosophy is life negation. And look, we have to enjoy life. Enjoy if you can. No objection. But how long? And, of course, Christ or any true teacher of religion will say, behind this surface life, there is a deeper life that is eternal. This enjoyment that you have on the sense plane is just a shadow compared to the true bliss or happiness that there is in the Atman. When you do not know that, and when you do not struggle to realize that, then it is, of course, you have to take your some joy, some pleasure in life. So naturally, senses are right for you, and they are real for you. They are the only true things for you. But know that there is some other enjoyment, real, which no senses can give, which no objects can give, and that is in the Atman. And so as long as there are these cravings and desires of the mind, so long is there the ignorance. You know, oftentimes I have explained purity of heart means this, that when you try to think of God or meditate upon God, there is no more any distraction. That is, then you have reached the purity of heart. no more any desire, any other distraction. But there is a continuous stream flowing towards God. And how can it happen? It can happen only when we become desireless. You see, Holy Mother at one time taught us to pray. Pray for being desireless. Pray that you may be desireless. Only desire for God. I'm telling the supreme truth. We may not be able to follow, does not matter. But do not bring down the ideal. Never bring down the ideal. Never make any compromises with the ideal. It's not so easy. It needs practice. It needs discipline. And as we discipline our mind and meditate, love grows, then desires become less and less, cravings become less and less, and then we begin to realize the joy, the sweetness that is in God. Then all desires leave us. Ignorance is nowhere except in the mind. The mind is filled with ignorance, and this causes the bondage of birth and death. When in the enlightenment of the Atman, a man transcends the mind, the phenomenal universe disappears from him. But you see, this transcending the mind means really to purify the mind. He will tell us later. It really means to purify the mind. As long as we live in the body, the mind is there. The body is there, the mind is there. And mind has to be made pure. That is, pure means when there is no other desire. All the impressions of the past are wiped out by creating that one deep impression of the Atman. You see, it's just like crystal and a flower reflecting upon it. If the crystal is dirty, it does not reflect. So that crystal and this flower, they become identified as it were, if when it is pure, when there is no dirt. Similarly, this mind itself, when becomes pure, it transcends as it were the impure mind. The present mind you transcend, that is, all the past impressions are cleared up. All the dirt is washed out. And you are only attached to God. The mind is attached to God only. And there is a perfect reflection. When in the enlightenment of the Atman, a man transcends the mind, the phenomenal universe disappears from him. When a man lives in the domain of mental ignorance, the phenomenal universe exists for him. You see, it is a projection of the mind. At the same time, it says, when a man lives in the domain of mental ignorance, the phenomenal universe exists for him. Now, may I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. We are observing this universe, which is projected by the cosmic mind. But we are also projecting, aren't we?
Yes, that's right. Our mind also is a projection of the cosmic mind, yes. Or we are parts of the cosmic mind. Instead, I think it is better to express it that way, not projection of the cosmic mind, but our minds are parts of the cosmic mind. But not our Atman. Our Atman has nothing to do with cosmic mind, it transcends the cosmic mind. You see, there again is a philosophical point. Cosmic mind, say Ishvara, God, what you call personal God. That is, the Brahman or Atman with the whole universal Maya. But there is Maya in Brahman, But Brahman is not affected by the Maya, he's the ruler of that Maya. Individual people is Atman or Brahman associated with a part of that Maya. But the difference is this, we are slaves to that Maya, we have been dominated by that Maya, and so we are bound. So individual man cannot be Ishvara. Atman, or you, or I, can never aspire to become God in a personal sense. But Atman can transcend personal God and become one with Brahman. You see, it's a very interesting point also, you see. If you become one with personal God, and then I also become one with personal God, you have the power to create, preserve and destroy. I also have the power to create, preserve and destroy. Then you would like to create, I would like to destroy. There will be trouble.
You say that one may destroy and another creates, but it seems that is exactly what is happening. One group of people create, and another group seems to want to destroy.
Well, God is doing all that business, creation and destruction. It's one God who is doing all that. Well, you may say some are giving birth to people and some are killing people. It's God who is doing all that play.
Is realizing the Atman the same thing intellectually as seeing God?
No. When you see God, then you are separate from God. Then you are individual. And God is personal. You see, there is a separation. But Atman, when you realize Atman, there is no you and he.
Then do you have to see God first and then realize him?
Not necessarily. You see, for instance, Nirvikalpa Samadhi, there you realize Atman and Brahman. In Sabhikalpa, you have the sense of separation. You see the personal God. But take for instance Swami Vivekananda. He had first the Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And then he had Sabhikalpa Samadhi. Now again, Buddha. This is my interpretation of Buddha. That he attained Nirvikalpa Samadhi, but he never had Sabhikalpa Samadhi. As a general rule, people go from Sabhikalpa to Nirvikalpa. But Buddha went to Nirvikalpa and never had Sabhikalpa. That is why he never spoke about personal God at all.
If you see God as light,
if you see God as light and
not in any form,
yes.
What is next in that?
Well, God, to see God as light is wonderful, but that is not exactly seeing God. Just an attribute, a little power you see. That's not seeing the whole of God. You see, God is light, more light, more light, more light. There is no end to it. So if you see just a light and bliss and joy, that's not enough.
How do you go on from there?
Well, go on. Struggle for it. Meditate and long for Him. Then you have. If you are satisfied with a little light, then you do not grow anymore.
To come a little lower, you start in by reasoning upon God, and intellectually, you may convince yourself that you are Atman, and then you may go on for years.
Yes, people are deluded.
No, but I mean you may not be deluded anymore.
No, you are deluded. If you don't realize and you think intellectually you understand, then you are deluded. I have seen such people in my life. You know, for instance, so-called Zen Buddhism, not real Zen Buddhism, but there are preachers of Zen Buddhism, who say, you are that. What is there to do about it? You are that. And so if you say, now I told him, if I pinch you, then you are no longer that. And you see, this man preaches that you cannot be perfect unless you have sex life. You see? That's their idea of religion. And they're preaching such things in the name of religion, in the name of Zen Buddhism. I know all that.
Then what it comes down to is that your problem is patience.
No, your problem is you should know that religion is to transcend this dirty mind.
With regard to the question I asked previously of one group creating and another destroying, if I have transcendence of the mind, will I still see those things?
It's not the question of our seeing or not seeing. It is best for us to try to see God everywhere. That is one thing. But why bother about those things? You know, some people do this or do that. Well, let them do. What can we do about it? You cannot think of reforming the whole world. But know that there are such people as I. Don't bother. You know, we had one friend, and when she would read anything against Vedanta or religion, oh, she would get so fired up and would want to write back, you know. I said, how long are you going to fight this way? So let them write, let them say anything. But ultimately the truth triumphs. Nobody can destroy religion. Nobody can destroy God. They may say God is dead, but God is living. But to them God is dead. Have you ever heard religionless Christianity? Oh, you are not keeping up with the modern thoughts. No, another question. I didn't stimulate you very well, I think.
Swami, I'm always confused by the idea that the mind drops away, and then the purified mind is the same as the Atman. It almost sounds like there are two minds.
No, how can it be?
I mean, we know that there is only one mind.
One mind. But in words, in speech, it says to transcend the mind. which means to purify the mind again. Not two minds. The mirror is full of dirt. Transcend that mirror by cleaning it up.
Then what is it that falls away? It is the dirt?
The dirt falls away, but the mind has to remain. Otherwise, you see, if there was no mind, when you come back from samadhi, how do you know? How do you remember anything?
That's the part that confuses me.
Nothing to be confused. Just language is confusing maybe, but that's why I'm here to explain, to point out that transcending the mind means to make the mind pure, and pure mind and pure Atman almost become identical. The crystal and the flower.
But isn't there such a thing as the mind melting away, like the salt doll that enters the ocean?
That is again, you see, the ultimate liberation. That's what I point to that. But as long as you come back, the mind is there. And as long as we are living in the body, and if we attain samadhi now, then the mind is there. And that is why we continue to live. Mind dissolves away when we become one, completely one with God, after the dissolution of the body. That's total liberation. And so again, there are many who do not want liberation. You see? What they want? To enjoy the love for God. I was praying this morning. I don't want liberation, Lord. These are different attitudes, different moods. You see, religion is a very interesting thing. It is never monotonous. And our life, in our spiritual life with God, is not monotonous. One moment you feel this way, another moment, no, I am Atman, Brahman. I'm free, I'm liberated. What for seeking? Who seeks for liberation? I'm liberated. And then again you pray to the Lord, Lord, I don't want liberation. You see, and the same individual, in different moods, different attitudes. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Hunaktu Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om. May Brahman protect us, may he guide us, may he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all, may our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.